The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Welcome to a Friday night. Brad Steiger is under the weather. He actually lost his voice. He's got some kind of a throat laryngitis thing. He sends his apologies, and we will be holding forth without Brad, who will be back, of course, in just a couple more weeks as we roll into December. But we're going to do a lot tonight. First up with George Filer, and then in an hour with Peter Davenport, eyewitnesses, a lot of things to talk about. As usual, George Filer's most current editions of Filer's Files, which come out each week, are located up at the top of the first news block at rents.com, and we urge you all to take a look there. We'll be referring to those during the first hour. And as usual, there are lots of interesting pictures and stories and anecdotes and scientific bits of information as well. George puts together the world's foremost weekly free weekly UFO newsletter that you could ever hope to get. You can get it free to your news, well, come whatever news feed you have, whether it's, I guess, on Facebook or in your email box. You'll never have anything better than this one. If you'd like to receive it at your email box every week, just write to George and ask to majorstar@verizon.net. majorstar@verizon.net. George Filer, and say, "Hi, George, heard you on Jeff's program. Would you please put me on the list for Filer's Files?" And you'll get them every week. They are fun. They are passed around tremendously by people all over the world, and they're always provocative. George, certainly not known to be the life of the party, but he is a great partier, and in fact, we get to join George actually at a party tonight at the Blackwell residence, and they were right. Kind enough to indulge George. Hello, George. Welcome back, and how are things going there? Having a good time?
Fine. We just had a wonderful dinner at Patty Blackwell's house in Hamilton Square, New Jersey.
What did Patty prepare for the guests?
Lobster ravioli with shrimp on top.
And a lobster ravioli with shrimp on top?
Yes.
That's wild.
Tasted delicious. You know, a nice salad and dessert.
Wow. Are you sleepy? Ready for a nap?
Not particularly, you know.
Good.
We have a lot of nice guests here, and all are experts in UFOs in one way or another, either have seen them or you know, study them, that kind of thing.
Nice.
So I have some people tonight that, if we have time, would like to tell a little bit about themselves and their stories.
Well, that's what ufology is all about, really. It's about people who see things they cannot understand and they'd like some answers. and they contact you and Peter and folks at MUFON who can come out and investigate. So it's always great to talk to folks who have seen things. And actually, the truth be known, I think that most Americans have seen things that they can't explain. That doesn't mean most Americans have seen unidentified flying objects from elsewhere, but they have seen unidentified flying objects. So it's something that you kind of knock on every door and you'll find something sooner or later. All right. By the way, we have issue number 45 up at Rents.com and on George's website as well, the National UFOCenter.com. And again, if you look at the top of that first news block, you'll see issue number 45 and 46. Let's take a quick scan down number 45, George, real quick, and then we'll say hello to some of the folks at the party.
Sure.
Lobster ravioli with shrimp on top. Wow. That's a new one on me.
I'm real full.
I'll tell you, I'm full just hearing about it. All right. Now we have, as usual, in issue number 45, George has put together some eclectic reports and a little vignette about Commander Graham Bethune, who has those very striking photos, which are controversial, but they are certainly interesting. And as well, you've got a picture here of Secretary of the Navy Kimball. Now, tell us what that's all about. And General George, General George Marshall.
Well, I think the fact is that many of the people in important positions in the past have seen UFOs. And Graham Bethune was a commander in the Navy, was a pilot, and used to fly as the pilot for many of these important people.
Mm-hmm.
And
a taxi driver.
Driver, but at the same time,
Say a limo driver. That sounds better.
They're all, fairly high rank, and and the pilot has a certain amount of confidence, and they... Many of these people were pilots themselves, and they'd sit up and talk in the front of the aircraft, and, it takes hours and hours to fly from one country to another and so on. And, and Graham had a UFO sighting over the Atlantic and was, you might say well-known in Navy circles that he had seen a UFO up close and it had flown formation with him and so on. And these top-ranking people would often strike up conversations with him about UFOs and, ask him about his sighting. And then they would tell him various things and essentially about what they knew about UFOs. It was just, way to pass the time. So Commander Bethune had become a pretty good friend of mine, and he told me about what was going on with and what many of these high-ranking people had said, and indicated that at the highest levels of the government that UFOs were considered to be real. He had some pictures that he passed on to me, and that he was a good friend with Admiral Forney, and Admiral Forney, I was kind of like head of a lot of technical stuff. But in any case, Forney indicated that there was craft at Wright Patterson Air Force Base, and that actually he would fly Forney in there, and Forney would go to various meetings, with the Air Force personnel, and it was kind of like standard information that these discs were real, that they were visiting us, and pretty much the same story that the rest of us know, but he was hearing this information from the highest level. And one of the admirals that he flew was Admiral Radford, and Radford told him how he personally had seen the UFOs coming out of the water, flying around. And apparently the different admirals also knew General George Marshall. And Marshall was the chief of staff of the Army, later on became Secretary of State.
Oh, yeah.
And also Secretary of Defense. In other words, he was right in the top levels of government.
Don't get any higher than that, yeah.
And obviously knew a lot of what was going on and was a friend with Winston Churchill, and Churchill was getting data from, you might say, the UK and their people. And in any case, he had won the Nobel Peace Prize and was passing on all this information that Commander Bethune was kind of getting second hand.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting that Frank Chilly, who happens to be sitting next to us as we talk, and actually maybe he should be telling this story, but he also knew Commander Bethune, and he had gotten similar information from Commander Bethune that I had. In other words, if nothing else, he was telling both of us a similar
story. Same thing. I understand. Sure. Sure.
And essentially, I didn't want to reveal this until Frank actually sent it to me. And I said, well, Frank's telling about it. I might as well reveal it as well. And Commander Bethune had a tremendous amount of information from all these admirals that had been passed on to him through the years. And we're essentially passing it on to our readers at this point.
Well, good. We'll talk to Frank in just a couple minutes. What do you say? We do that?
Sure.
Okay, we have a break coming up right now. We'll let George sit down and relax at his get-together at the Blackwell residence. It's fun doing this kind of thing. You can almost smell that lobster, lasagna, and shrimp. Or was it ravioli?
It's ice cream. It's really delicious.
With ice cream. Too much, George. Too much. All right. Hold on, gang. We'll be right back with George Filer and friends in just a few minutes. Okay, welcome back. How many radio programs, folks, will let you go to a very lovely dinner party? Not many. This is fun. I'm enjoying this. George is being hosted by Patty Blackwell, who has cooked up a sumptuous meal, obviously. George, you want to introduce Frank to us, and we'll say hello to
right,
him.
Right, Frank's sitting right next to me, and he'll tell you more about Graham, because both of us were friends, but he seems to know more than even I know.
Very good. Okay.
Pass the phone over, John.
Good evening, Jeff. How are you?
I'm fine, Frank. Thanks for Frank for being here, and thanks for being at the dinner party. We're going to thank Patty a little bit later. Was that lasagna or ravioli, the lobster?
Ravioli. It was lobster ravioli with shrimp on top. It was fabulous.
Man.
And she made a raspberry parfait that I'm telling you, you know,
Okay,
you
I
would really
you.
Enjoy it.
You're going to have to be carried to your car. That's what you're telling
yeah,
me.
Yeah, yes, for sure.
All right.
We'll be hoisted up. Anyway, I wanted to mention that Graham had informed me that he had taken or flown General Marshall to two crash retrievals.
Really? Now, wait a minute. Whoa. This is big stuff.
It is.
Okay, what kind of airplane was Graham flying? Do you remember?
I think it was to the crash retrieval sites.
Yeah. Just curious.
God,
what, a DC-3? This goes back to DC-3 flying or C-47?
I think it was DC-3.
So I'm trying to get a time frame, Frank.
Okay, the time frame was where George Marshall was probably
maybe be in the 50s.
53, 54.
Yeah, okay. That's during the height of the UFO phenomenon as it was covered by the mainstream media in this country anyway.
Yeah. He said the first one he flew him to was with General Marshall, and he said there was a lot of other high-ranking admirals, as well as academians from some of the major universities from around the United States.
Wow.
And he said the disc that was recovered was 100 feet in diameter, and he said it was brought back to Wright Pat. And then he said he was also asked to bring General Marshall to another crash retrieval site in Utah.
Uh-huh.
And he had a picture of the one from Utah, and that was 100 feet in diameter.
Did you see that picture?
I saw that picture. And some of the photographs that is in Linda Moulton Howe's book, High Strangeness,
uh-huh.
were photographs that Graham had given to her. I was at a luncheon meeting in New Hope where Graham had given the photos to Linda, and some of those photos, Graham said, had been given to him by Admiral Forney.
Amazing stories. If I can, let me ask you straight away, is there any way to get these pictures collected and maybe put in one of George's newsletters?
Yeah, I could work on that and give the information to George, sure.
Oh, I would really be honored to be able to publish that, and George would, I know, love to have him in the newsletter. This is an extraordinary thing you're telling us. See,
yeah,
folks,
Graham was pivotal, and he knew all the astronauts, and he said every one of the astronauts had their own personal experience with the craft. But they were forbidden to talk about it. And
That makes
sense.
They
would talk to him because they knew him very well.
Of course. Now, what this does, and for you younger people out there, General George C. Marshall, again, was as big a figure as you get in this government, outside of being president.
That's right.
An enormously powerful man. And Commander Bethune is not about to make stories up about these things. Did he tell you any more about that the 100-foot disc that was taken to Wright-Patterson that he flew General Marshall to? What was talked about? Did Commander Bethune get to go see it?
He said the photograph that I saw, mm-hmm. he said that the craft was so lightweight, he said that 3 or 4 men could lift it very easily.
100-foot in diameter craft?
And it could be lifted by 3 or 4 men. And the photograph that I saw of it, it looked perfect, but there was just a little bit of damage on one side of the craft when it had come down. It apparently had come down hard and hit into some rock outcropping, and that was the only thing that you could see in it.
Do we have any idea if these craft were brought down intentionally? Because remember, that's Frank Fischino's book, Shoot Them Down, 1953-54,
yep.
when the orders were from the Air Force to shoot the damn things down, and we lost a lot of men and aircraft because of that. Eventually, that order was rescinded and rolled back. Did you get a sense that this was a hostile effort to take this craft down?
I don't know that, Jeff. All I know is the one that was recovered in Iceland was pristine. There was no marks on it, no imperfections whatsoever,
uh-huh.
and the one in Utah just had that one defect in it, but other than that, it looked perfect, and it was extremely lightweight. It was like a black silver color, 100 feet in diameter again.
That sounds absolutely stunning. Was the picture of good resolution?
Yes, very good resolution.
Well, boy, I'll tell you, I'll do whatever I can to help. I know you'll give it to George if that's possible.
Yeah,
I'll try to get
my hands on it and give it to George. You're quite aware that Graham had his own experience coming back from Iceland where he saw a craft that was 300 feet in diameter.
No, I don't know that either.
Up in Project Blue Book. It was one of the earliest episodes, uh-huh. wasn't it, George? Written up Graham's experience in Project Blue Book. I think that was 1951 that occurred.
Well, now, Brad Steiger, who is usually here with us on this night once a month for 3 hours, was the man who wrote that first public release book about Blue Book and would know about these sightings, I'm sure. All right, I want to go back, if I can, just a little bit to the first Utah crash, or I don't know if the second one or the first one that Graham...
Utah was the second one. The first one was in Iceland.
All right, the second crash in Utah. What about crew?
There was no crew on board.
Remotely controlled, piloted, directed vehicle.
Or maybe it was purposely left there.
Oh.
But he said again, it was attended by George Marshall, high-ranking admirals, and members of the academic world from major universities.
How thick did the disc appear to be approximately in the middle in that photograph?
In the photo, it would look to be maybe 18 to 20 feet high.
Plenty of room for us folks to walk around in there.
Oh, plenty of room, yep.
That's incredible.
Yep.
That's
what they did was they tarped it and they brought it to Wright Pat, and it disappeared at Wright Pat.
How do they truck something 100 feet wide?
I don't know.
When I guess
Graham
you take country roads,
there,
huh?
Yeah. Graham had always said that the main thrust of the control of the secrecy was not coming from the Air Force; it was coming from the Navy.
Now there we go again. There's the Navy.
Yep.
Project
Graham
Clementine.
Graham was one of the first people to ever talk to me about the 10th Fleet. and their off-planet capabilities.
Okay, Frank, you just opened another amazing door. That goes, of course, right to the hacking of Gary McKinnon, the whole story there.
Sure.
Let's come right back. This is very interesting. Stand by, if you would, please. We'll have to take a break. We'll come right back with you, Frank, and George, and Patty, and everybody else in just a couple minutes. Okay, and welcome back, talking to Frank. Frank, would you spell your last name, please, for me?
Sure, it's C-H-I-L-L-E.
Pronounced?
Chili.
Just like it sounds.
Yep, just like it sounds.
All right. Okay, these are extraordinary stories, very important, and just, boy, leave me scratching my head. The idea that this 100-foot in diameter Utah craft crashed, had no crew, opens a lot of doors as well. But tell us more. What we got into is the Navy, and I know that Commander Bethune, a naval aviator, again, kept telling you, I guess, or said that it was the Navy. And we
he
go back
told
to
me from the first time I met him. He said, "Don't believe the Air Force is behind this." He said, mm-hmm. "They are merely a ploy to keep the public's attention away from the real secrecy, which was being orchestrated by the U.S. Navy."
They did a good job.
He was behind it all.
Yeah, they did a good job. Project Clementine, and one wondered even then, what the heck was the Navy doing sending a satellite up to literally photograph and map every square inch of the moon?
Yes.
Obviously, they had an agenda. They had a reason.
Yep.
Now, you mentioned, I guess, the 10th Fleet. Is that the formal name of what Gary McKinnon, the hacker, stumbled across to some degree?
Yes, it was, where he had the roster list of the officers who were off-planet.
Wow. Now, Gordon Duff, the senior editor of Veterans Today, has been on this program. He said, "We originally began to successfully back-engineer some of this technology in the 50s in our original large craft." That's not to say that we're not being visited here, but our original large triangular craft, TR-3B, later on, actually were first constructed in the mid to late 50s. And he said they're still flying, some of them.
Well, Jeff, this may be a surprise to you and your audience, but my uncle, who was in the Air Force for 30 years, told me he saw the prototype of the SR-71 fly in 1957, out at Hill Air Force Base. He said it was called Project Valkyrie.
Valkyrie, wow.
Yep.
That's,
he said that was 1957. Yeah. He said that was the prototype for the SR-71.
Now, that's a traditionally fueled aircraft. It's retired now, of course. Most of you listening know about that. The Blackbird, it was it was called later on.
And it kept that quiet for years.
Yeah, oh yeah. Okay, the Navy, the 10th Fleet. It probably didn't surprise you that this country tried so hard to extradite Gary McKinnon for all those years then, I guess, because they were afraid, and maybe they know, that he saw a lot more than he ever disclosed.
That's right. And I felt that they never wanted any of that information to go public, Jeff. They wanted to keep a lid on the 10th Fleet and its activities.
They would have killed him if they brought, or turned him into a vegetable if they had gotten hold of him, obviously.
Yeah.
I hope for his sake he has a peaceful life. It was pretty clear, I think, to most people, you included, George, and everybody, that Gary McKinnon, certainly if he saw what he did see, there's no reason he didn't see a heck of a lot more. Now, just to recap for you who know or might not know about Gary McKinnon, he recently finally won the right to remain in England and not to be extradited over here to face hacking charges, because he used a dial-up connection to get into the Pentagon and actually found the records of the U.S. Navy's 10th Fleet, I guess all the command and control people, the fleet commanders. We have what this tells us. If bear with us, I can't prove it, but all the evidence supports it. We have craft that can fly probably all over the solar system without too much trouble.
I was told by a physicist who worked at Lockheed Martin that the black world is actually 44 or 45 years ahead of what the white world is aware of regarding technology.
Yeah. So, in other words, the Malin Space Sciences, MSS, which has the contract from NASA to screen all the images that come in from space probes and satellites and so forth, we know that they have altered and obscured artifacts on the moon, on Mars. Let me put it this way. They've at least changed photographs. We know that.
Yes.
That's clear. So something is being hidden. And it's hard for people to understand, Frank, that the space shuttle program and all the space programs that NASA runs are essentially diversions.
That's right. Yep. They're all obsolete technologies anyway.
Horse and buggy.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, Graham would always say to us that the astronauts, he knew all the astronauts, he said, Frank, they want to come forward and they want to talk about their experiences, mm-hmm. but they need amnesty, they need protection so that their lives are not threatened or benefits and pensions are not threatened. They
of course.
Want to be as normal people, but they want to be able to talk about what they had experienced.
And they want their families to be safe.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely. That too. Gordy Cooper on this program years ago before he passed told his story, and it was,
Jeff,
I was very honored.
He was the most vocal of all the astronauts.
Yeah.
Gordon
yeah.
went public almost immediately.
Yep. No, he was a real American, that guy. I you got nothing but respect out of me
yep.
for him. I really enjoyed talking
Did
to him.
Did you see the most recent post that Stephen Greer put on YouTube? It was an undisclosed experiences that Gordon Cooper had. He posted it on October 5th.
No, I haven't. I'd like to get
a
link to
it.
That.
About 20 minutes of additional disclosure that he had in the can that is being released now. So it makes you wonder how much more Stephen Greer's got.
Yeah, I would. So Gordy had he had the foresight enough to you know what really bothers me, and it's sad, but I understand it. The Roswell witnesses, how many
yes.
of them went to their graves taking it all with them?
Yes.
Because those were different times. I'm not knocking them, but you'd think that if they were exposed to the media as we are, they'd know right now that the public is certainly not going to flip out if it's ascertained tomorrow that we're being visited. I don't think they'd do much more than blink. They've been exposed to this for 50 years.
Yes.
Unless it was misused somehow.
Yes.
But just a statement, a matter of fact. I mean, they talk about prepping a civilization for the reality. Come on, 50 years of the media since the 1950s, we've been seeing ET everywhere.
I know, it's ridiculous. It really is. Jeff, I wanted to let you know that we do have two other guests here that would like to share some information
Let's
with you.
Do it. We'll go right yes. through the break. So, by all means, thank you for sharing that, Frank.
My
it's
pleasure.
Been an
I'll
honor.
Give some additional information to George, and I'm sure he'll get this information to you, and perhaps we'll get a chance to speak again.
I hope so. Thank you.
Thank you so very much.
All righty, indeed.
Are you ready for the next guest?
We are. Go ahead, who is
his name,
it?
His name is Dave Stinnert.
All right.
Dave Stinnett. He's director of New Jersey UFO Conference and UFO field researcher for the past 30 years.
That's all, huh? 30 years.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, it's only 30
okay.
years. Yeah.
All right.
He's just a youngster.
Okay.
Take care, Jeff. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Frank.
Good evening, Jeff.
Hi, Dave. Thank you for being here, and thanks for 30 years. Wow.
Yeah, I was about to say, at the table tonight, I'm probably the youngest member of the crew here.
Well, I understand you started when you were 7 years old, just out of the Cub Scouts. Was that it?
Well, more like 12. But.
Okay, good enough. So, your biggest thrill, the most fun for you, what keeps you going at this?
I don't think there's anything that fires my imagination like this subject.
Uh-huh. How could there be? It's really the biggest question, isn't it?
You know, as a kid, some people wanted to be doctors and lawyers. I always wanted to be Ted Phillips. So.
No kidding.
And
wow, I hope you've.
I've been able to meet Ted and have Ted invite me out to his area to do some research with him.
Wow.
Presently, I've been out in western Pennsylvania hanging out with Allison Cruz and filming the UFOs out in her area, which are incredible.
Well, there are so many, and the to my way of thinking, the suggestion is that there are a number of different intelligences visiting here all the time. It's not as if we have one or two types of phenomena. We have just amazing differences and uncountable different kinds of objects and behaviors. And anyway, I'm glad you got a chance to spend time with Ted Phillips. I have the greatest respect for Ted. He was on the program many years ago. Ted Phillips, for those of you who don't know, worked with Dr. Hynek and has carried on the work of trace case documentation. That means something that lands or otherwise comes close to the ground, leaves a mark that could be, and often would be admissible in court and given the highest status as evidence. Physical things, trees, branches, impressions in the ground, obviously pieces of metal have been left here and there. Go ahead, tell us more, Dave.
I was just saying the funny thing about Ted is that when you're sitting in a neighborhood after you get a report, or you're sitting out in some field, you know, once you've gotten some valid reports and you're looking to get some glass on these things, you start to wonder yourself, you know, I should be out with girls and having dinner somewhere, but when you talk to Ted, I mean, he's just as junked out as I am about this, and he gets you re-energized about it again, and you drop all that stuff pretty quick. But I have to admit, even when you're sitting, it's pretty boring work a lot of the times, but when they do present themselves, it's worth all the wait.
Well, good research is on the boring side. Much of the punchline isn't always there. You got to get to it. How many trace cases does Ted have now? Do we know? It used to be 6,000 or 7,000.
Yeah, it's probably still up around that range, I think. I think he tries to, he says from time to time it's 5,000, but his area has been hot this summer, so he's been out there. I was supposed to go out to his area this summer, but it was so dry, and we're going to use some new tactics to see if we can draw some of these things in for filming. And I guess the ranchers overheard us and decided maybe wait till next spring when it's a little wetter out there, so they don't have to worry about things catching fire and whatnot.
Oh, interesting. Would you do me a favor?
Yeah, I'm going to go into details about what we're going to be doing.
Yeah, but I understand. I get an idea, though. Would you kindly pass along my regards to Ted and invite him? If he'd like to come on the program again, I would be most honored to do that, to recognize his work and to help bring it out to the public. So just let him know.
Yeah, I had him at, I was actually just made the new director at the New Jersey UFO conference. So I'm fortunate because Graham Bethune and George Filer and Pat Marcatilio and that crew were all the active researchers there once upon a time. So, we had Ted, and Ted was showing some of his new stuff and stuff that he's been capturing. And I started showing him my stuff, and we just were talking into wee hours and junking out about, you know, all the various characteristics and correlations that we've been drawing, and it was a hell of a good time.
Go ahead.
I was going to say Steve Pierce from the Travis Walton case. I actually got to be friends with him a number of years ago, and I managed to talk him out of hiding and put him in front of a crowd for the first time at our conference.
Very good. That's always fun when you finally get somebody with information to open up. I understand.
Yeah, and he's got a whole side to it that a lot of people didn't imagine and are just fascinated about hearing.
Uh huh. Okay, so what about the world we're in now? When you were young, when you started this investigation career of yours, there were no digital cameras. There was film and flash, and now we've got the ability, unfortunately, with computers to create almost anything. And it's been a blessing, also a great curse, because you're fighting the issue of people fomenting hoaxes. How do you approach all that as a researcher?
Yeah, to a certain extent, that part of it's become kind of nightmarish, because a lot of the legitimate researchers we just get hammered with the films that we put up, because nowadays I guess a lot of people think that posting YouTube videos is UFO research, and I keep saying no, the guys who are in the field taking those videos are the ones doing the real field research, and they're sitting out in the cold for a lot of those nights, and you have groups like Third Phase, and the guys who run those sites are CGI guys, so they're putting up crazy stuff and people are buying into it.
Exactly.
And fortunately, guys have been in it long enough. We have contacts out there, and some of the contacts are CGI guys who work for Lucasfilms and stuff like that, and we'll pass them underneath their nose to see how they feel about it. And usually, they can pick that stuff apart pretty quick.
Right.
But for the average Joe, it's pretty tough to differentiate some of this stuff.
Sure it is. Sure it is. All right, we don't have a whole lot of time. Let's thank you, Dave, very much again, and thanks for 30 years of service to the American people, which is exactly what it is.
No, we're still going. It's going hard, Jeff. So.
Good, good. And who's up next on the phone to talk to us?
Cindy.
It's Cynthia Dunn. She's an RN and an experiencer in the 70s.
Oh, very good. Okay. Thank you, David.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Cynthia. An experiencer in the 70s.
Well, no. Actually, I've had experiences starting from the early 70s. And
what kind?
I was asked. Well, I've had a lot of paranormal experiences, but I was asked to talk about something that my sister and I both witnessed in the late 70s. I'd say it was about 77, 78.
Okay.
And I was a teenager. I was about, I'd say at that time, 14, 15. And we were wide awake. I live in New Jersey, and my sister and I shared a room at the time. And we were talking, goofing around, and time to fall asleep. And I was looking out the window. We shared a room, and where I slept was right under a large window. And all of a sudden, our room filled up with a very thick bluish green light. And it just, you know, so incredible, and it was so vivid. I've just turned 50, and I can remember it like it was yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, I was right under the window, and I could see a disc-shaped object. But within, our room was a blue-green color, but there was a vibrational hum. There was a feeling to it. You could almost feel like an energy.
Got it.
I could see a disc-shaped object within kind of a brilliant, bright white light.
Mm-hmm.
And the bright white light seemed to, like, go in and out, and it made these geometrical-type shapes.
Huh.
And my sister Karen actually was watching something very similar but at a different angle. It was the same thing, but she recalls it a little bit differently. And you could almost see, like, little sparks coming out from this object. And I remember looking at it, and I was mesmerized by it. And it just, you know, it seemed like it was right there. And in the disc-shaped object, it looked like there were little figures and windows.
Were you on the first floor or the second floor of a house?
Well, the house is really only one level.
Okay.
So it was the first level.
All right. And was the disc more or less, let's just call it parked, or was it on the ground?
It wasn't on the ground. It seemed to be hovering.
Okay. And the windows were around, or what looked like windows were around the sides of it, I assume?
Well, it was a large window, and it was right in front of this object, or we were right in front of it.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not sure exactly how far away it was from the window, but it looked like it was right there. And
Were you afraid?
No. Well, actually, I stood up, but then I was frozen. But I wasn't frozen because I was afraid. I was frozen because I couldn't move.
Understand.
The state of being where I could not move. And I'm watching this whole thing that seemed like it took a long time, but at the same time, all of a sudden, the object went out and then shot straight up, and it was gone. And the strangest thing is, of course, we told our parents about it. We were teens, and nobody believed us.
No.
The weirdest thing was, it left a large ring out in the middle of the backyard. And for years, snow would melt. And my father said it was grub worms. And, actually, I think about 2 years later, they saw something they couldn't explain. And anyway, it was just, that was my experience, and I was asked to share it. But had I not... if I had experienced it by myself, I would have thought I was imagining it. But I was wide awake. My sister experienced it as well. And to this day, it's like it happened yesterday.
I understand. I've heard this many, many times. These are life-changing events. They don't go away.
Mm-hmm.
They're right with you. So the color of this object, again?
Okay, well... It was three different things. Our room turned like a bluish green,
okay,
thick fog.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of the window was filled with this brilliant, bright white light. And within the bright white light, there was a disc-shaped object. Now, outside of the white light, there were like little sparks, almost like a yellow-red kind of a spark. So I was seeing everything, and it was all at the same time. And the white light seemed to be going in and out, but revolving, like a geometrical pattern.
Wow, it must have been mesmerizing.
It was incredible. And when I stood up, I couldn't move. And I was just frozen, but I'm looking right at it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I was able to really, you know, look at this disc-shaped object, and it looked like there were little figures in windows.
And sounds like you could have thrown a rock and hit it. It sounds like it was that close.
It was very close. And from what I recall, the ring in the backyard, I'd say it was about 50 feet from the window, maybe closer.
And every year the snow would melt in a circle?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it would. And my father said we had grub worms.
Oh, sure, yeah. Radioactive grub worms.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, wow, how interesting. I'm not sure that radioactivity would cause that, but who knows what kind of energy may have been left behind by this.
Yeah,
that's fascinating.
And my sister Karen, again, she had the same exact experience, but she recalls it from a different angle.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it was pretty much the same thing. It was just a little bit different.
That, of course, is suggestive of missing time and other things that may or may not be of interest to you.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had any other experiences? Do you think you may have seen more than you remember?
Well, honestly, I don't recall anything more than that part of it, except there were other times that I do remember more dreams where I'm running after like a disc-shaped craft.
Hmm.
But that was more like a dream and not something where I was wide awake.
Running after one, like, don't leave me on this crazy planet?
Kind of thing, yeah, I'd say so. Kind of like that.
I get it.
Why, you know, but throughout the years, my sister and I have had different weird, both paranormal experiences and different dreams and so forth. But it all seems to stem from that one experience.
Ever had any,
escalated.
Any
yeah.
interest in hypnotic regression?
You know, it's funny you said that. I at one time years ago, I went to see his name was Dr. David Jacob.
Sure.
Yeah, and I did have a session with him one time, and I did recall things. And I actually haven't really talked about it in years, but we went back to that night, and you know, and when he was talking to me, I saw more. And, you know, just where a part of me was going outside of the window and in a craft.
And
that kind of a thing.
Now, David Jacobs, of course, David's been on this program a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And his book called The Threat is, again, a must read. Did you read his book?
I have not, no.
Yeah, that book is fascinating because he came to the conclusion that whatever is going on is reaching or has reached its final stage.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't want to go to that kind of a conclusion, but he said the evidence directed him to it. And I think that would be a book maybe you won't be comfortable, but it's called The Threat. And David is a very serious man, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he was a very nice guy. And
oh, yeah.
You know, for whatever reason, I chose not to do that again.
Well, I understand. There's something in you that says no need. Maybe that'll never change. Well, thank you very much for that.
Well, it's been a pleasure.
Well, of course. We just have a couple minutes left. What I'd like to do is if you could pass the phone to Patty, and then we'll put George on and say goodnight, because I want to thank Patty.
Okay, will do.
All right. Thank you.
Patty?
I'm here real quick we're finding Patty.
Yeah, good. I just want to say thanks to her, and then we got to go. We're out of time, but that was splendid.
Hi, Jeff.
Patty, thank you very much for opening your home to all of us. We enjoyed
it. My pleasure.
We enjoyed it very, very much.
It was a pleasure to speak with you, certainly.
Well, thank you. And
I think everybody had a very nice chat. I think they did. To it all.
We sure enjoyed listening to them. We'll talk, maybe we'll talk to you again, Patty. We can do this once a year. Who knows?
Love it.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Indeed.
Would you like to talk to George again?
Yes, I got to say goodnight, and I'll say goodnight to you. Thank you.
Good night. You're most welcome. Hold on.
We go to Patty's every so often and have a nice time and a nice dinner. And but usually the people there are all very interesting, which have excellent stories. Some of these stories, and I put into my files and like to tell people out there about them, that UFOs are real. It's just a matter of looking for them and finding them yourself.
Indeed. Well, help from George Filer is always welcome. Filer's files, you can get your free copy delivered to your electronic email box every week. Just write to George at Major, M-A-J-O-R, star, and George is a star, Major Star at Verizon.net. Thank you, George. That was a great dinner party. I could almost taste the food. Much appreciated. Have a wonderful night, George.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Okay. Bye. Good night. All right. There we go. That was a very fun hour. Okay, we'll be right back with hour two and three with Peter Davenport coming up next.